Hello, everyone. It has been a long time, much longer than I had originally intended. But welcome back to the Deeper Podcast. I'm Austin Slater. That's Dan Kinnis. Dan, it's so refreshing to be sitting back down again in this space.
I miss this.
Yeah. We were talking before the show started, listeners, and we realized that we've been pretty inconsistent just because there's been a lot of travel or whatnot. You know, I was in Canada. And then we got back and we're immediately sick and busy. And so it was just one of those things. But it's always just so refreshing to get back in routine again.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things I always look forward to doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to do a big catch-up episode like we talked about in the last episode, because that would mean we're going through 3 weeks of stuff instead of 2 weeks. And although I love Dan very much, I don't want to push him too hard. It's been almost a month since we've done some of this.
Yeah.
So I figured we'd just kind of jump right into this week's stuff. So Dan, could you refresh our mind on goodness?
Yes, that is the fruit of the Spirit we talked about this particular week. So we're past the halfway point now of this series and up to goodness. And we noted how similar that is to kindness. There's a lot of connectivity between those two in particular. But then we talked about, well, what is the difference? You know, why is the apostle named both of those things? There must be some distinction. And we talked about how goodness takes things maybe just a step further. There's a real grace to acts of goodness. We use that familiar phrase, you know, if somebody does something out of the goodness of their heart and not necessarily what's deserving for someone else. And we talked about the connection with generosity, which I think is a very kind of a clear picture of what this looks like, because we know what that means in different areas of our lives to be generous, and talked about the output of that being refreshment or building life back into others. And, of course, we talked about, you know, how God shows this to us. He displays goodness. It's who he is. And that's always where we're going each of these weeks, to know that this is who God is. And knowing it from him, it gives us life to live that way too. And so then we just explored, what might this look like for us? What are some things we maybe need to keep in mind and maybe need to shift our focus a little bit so that we can be bearing this fruit? More maybe there's thinking about, what resources do I have that I can be generous with? These are all quite practical, I found, and I hope everyone else is finding them too. It's just, what does this expression of the Spirit look like?
What does this look like? And I really appreciated your emphasizing the proactive nature of goodness, because it is really something that does take, you know, again, that, like that gum lady example you used. Growing up, we had the candy lady, Lucia Simmons, who always had candy in her office.
Yep.
You know, and it's, again, they know that there's something coming up that they can spend a little more time, a little more effort in, that will make a difference.
Yep.
And we still remember that.
Yep.
Decades later now.
Yeah, small things.
Small things. So imagine on a larger scale. So I just really appreciated that emphasis you had for us there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things, though, as we're looking at doing this practically, because this was a very practical one, which I really appreciated, but this is one of the things where I feel we as Christians can kind of fall into, not a complacency, but it's an easier one, I feel, for us to mess this up, because we think a lot of the time, I'm a good Christian, I'm helpful, I tithe, I volunteer a little bit, I do all this stuff. But sometimes I feel like we kind of miss the mark with that. And that can be our sin nature. You know, we are still sin, prone to the challenges of sin.
Yep.
And so I was wondering, Dan, if you have any thoughts on ways that we as believers tend to kind of miss the mark when it comes to goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, because it is a reality. Probably more than I want to admit personally. And if you're like me, probably the case for us. But just thinking about this, so the Heidelberg Catechism talks about works of gratitude or service, and it has a question and answer about what is a truly good work. And it says, only something that arises out of true faith, conforms to God's will, and is done for his glory, rather than human opinion. And so right there, those measurements should make me humble. I think it's, those things, how much am I doing that, even good things that we would say, is kind of coming out of a selfish standpoint, like, this is going to make me look good. And so it's maybe not first and foremost about God's glory, but mine. So that's maybe a chief way that this comes into play. Because again, we see, people in the world who aren't believers, and they do things that are very life-giving to others and done very graciously. But, there's a lot of that human side to it, you know, and a variety of reasons we might do it. And maybe it's for a relationship we're trying to build up, or you know, oh, this person will scratch my back later on.
That connections piece really gets, and I find myself doing that all the time and having to catch myself being like, am I like trying to help out this person because I'm just trying to help them as I emulate Jesus, or because, oh, they're connected and that would be handy to have a connection in the future? That's a very real one.
Oh, yeah. And that's probably the chief thing, right? There's always just this human interplay, getting ahead, serving myself. It's just always there lurking, right? And I think that's when we emphasized a bit at the outset, what is goodness and this kind of undeserved or unmerited action. That right there should point us that, like, oh, yeah, this is a grace thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, Austin and I are good friends. I love the guy. And so, of course, I'm going to show goodness to him. Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's kind of also like, oh, we're going to look out for each other rather than someone who's maybe been in opposition to me. Mm-hmm. And thinks quite a bit differently than me. But then I'm still going out of my way to think, like, I wonder how I can do something good to Austin, despite all that. Like, that's a totally different, like, there's not going to be, he might even say, like, get upset, like, what are you doing this for? I don't want this from you. And not being receiving it well, and yet I'm still going to look to do that. It's quite a bit of a different.
And it builds your testimony so much. I was yesterday, we're recording this on Tuesday. On Monday, we had a meeting of the After Party, which is a small group that I help lead. And one of the people that we were talking, or that we were learning from, is a former lawyer, a free speech litigator. And he was saying during this session, he was like, you know what, actually, a lot of the best testimony work I had during my time litigating was actually advocating on behalf of whom I disagreed with. Because what it did was, they were like, they know that I have opinions on this, that, and the other thing, but I'm still advocating on their behalf. And that, for him, that goodness, that going that extra step, saying like, oh, this person actually cares, and they were able to ask, why are you doing this? And, you know, that opens a lot of doors that we might not have originally thought.
Absolutely. And we talked about that, how, you know, and this was, you know, me stating this as kind of, this is my thought, that this is the best form of testimony we can give about our faith. When we live it out, we bear this kind of fruit. Because when you do something like that, you know, where we talk other examples of goodness that go above and beyond, that are given towards someone who maybe is even opposition, people know the motivation for that does not come from a human standpoint. Because people don't do that, right? We just don't naturally do that. So it leads to the question, why are you doing this? What is going on here?
You know, and because you shouldn't be.
No, right. Because we all get it. And even some of our, I think, things that are coming from a good place, like trying to argue for the faith and talk about it, there's still this suspicion of like, well, what's in it for you? You know, who benefits, kind of that. Whereas when you're doing that, it's like, well, clearly you're not, because this is not easy for you. You know, I'm going to reject this. Or if you're looking from the outside, like, that person, man, they've hurt you, or they've done that, or you went way overboard at risk to yourself, even for somebody that you love. Who does that? And so what's going on there? So there is this opportunity then to say, well, yeah, this is really about God. And he's the one who's shown me this, and he's my motivation for wanting to live this way, even though it's not easy. And there's sacrifice and there's cost. So.
Yeah, that going, there's a phrase that I had learned growing up from an old book series, but it's going A and B, the C of D, you know, above and beyond the call of duty. And that really does leave an impact on people.
Yeah.
Especially in our testimony.
Yeah, the refreshment piece comes in from that. It just really does.
It does. One thing you did briefly mention just a little bit ago, I'd love to hop back on real quick. And during the sermon, you talked about this as well, about how we'll often get caught up in apologetics and how, you know, there is a time and a place for us to provide this defense of the faith. But sometimes that can be a little detriment to our goodness, to our living this out, because we get so focused on, I want to make sure I've got the theological things lined up, the intellectual. We're so focused on the brain and the mind and the heart that we miss the body in a lot of ways. So I'm just wondering really quick, when is it appropriate to engage in an apologetic discussion, and when should we, quote unquote, merely be practicing goodness?
Yeah, maybe it's helpful to think of even the order of the Lord's Prayer, you know, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. That practical hands-on approach maybe needs to precede the intellectual apologetic approach at times if it's going to be heard well.
Okay.
To think about, like, if I've shown you goodness and built some relational capital through that, right? You've seen me living out my faith in that way. I think most of the time you're going to be more open to, if I'm going to say, hey, I want to talk about what you're saying you believe versus what I believe, and maybe let me talk about where I think maybe you're missing something. Versus if I just come in with that, it's more likely to, like, get out of here. I don't want to hear it. I got these other needs. And sometimes, you know, we talk about that. You know, if someone has a cup of water, then they're really, they're well-fed and they're willing to, you know, talk about other things, and we can get into that. But there's a place for this, too. I mean, some people are coming into conversations with us for that purpose. They want to have an apologetic conversation. That's the way they think, and they, you know, if the faith's going to make sense to them, they need to hear it that way. And so there's nothing wrong with that. And I think we've had wonderful examples of that over the years, of people who engage that well. Like I said, there's always going to be a place for it. We see it scripturally. The fence, think of Paul in Athens and how he went about that. But think of the way he went about that. He did appeal to the culture he was in there in Athens and talked about what he'd seen in their city and referred to some of their culture and the poets and things like that. So we have to think about it, because I think there's more of a danger when it comes to defending our theology and standing on maybe these are the moral things we think are important, to be violent with those things or to use them as weapons versus acts of goodness. It's really hard to use them in that way. There's always this danger that's there for misuse in a greater sense when we're having these kind of more head arguments, if we could put it that way.
And so then when we're in those moments where our head arguments are getting violent almost, how can we kind of recognize that, and how can we readjust and step back?
Yeah, so we're talking about the fruit of the Spirit. If we can see that some of those things are getting off, like Paul talks in that passage, like you're biting and devouring each other. If that's the way this conversation's going, especially within the church, but let alone outside, I am not living into the fruit of the Spirit. That's his point, right? Don't become, he says at the very end, don't become conceited, provoking and envying each other, right? And so if I start getting so much of my high horse and I think I got that I'm attacking someone, I'm almost provoking them intentionally or trying to hurt someone with that. So the looking at these fruit, you know, these things need to be coming out. How am I approaching? Am I being patient, loving, you know, joyful, all these things, right? Well,
and that provoking piece, I think, really says a lot. Mm-hmm. Because at least for me personally, whenever I engage in these discussions, I always know there's a phrase or two that I could use that I'm like, this is going to get people riled. And I think one of the good ways to self-judge this is I'm like, am I aware in this conversation, oh, is this a phrase I'm going to use that I know is going to get them riled up, versus how can I reframe this in a way that will be well understood by all without involving that emotional response?
Well, I think it might have been the last time we were together, we talked about peace, and we said we're to be peacemakers, not troublemakers. Provoking is troublemaking, right? And frankly, we see this all the time. We're in an election season. So much of it is provoking. Even in the debates, they're trying to provoke each other to say something that's, you know, and they're trying to bring up these things that they know are going to raise somebody's blood pressure. You go on social media, people post things for that reason, just so they get all these responses that provokes all this stuff. We live in that kind of world, and so we don't want to engage that. That's not who we're meant to be. And if I'm in a conversation where, well, if anybody out here, you have siblings, we're really good at this with our siblings.
Oh, yeah.
We know those points, and we tend to do it because we, you know, for whatever reason, love seeing our siblings get upset sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you have to fight that.
Yeah.
And then the same thing in the church, same thing in the human family, as it were. We can provoke each other without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, to fight that. So in those conversations, when we're trying to defend the faith, and it could start from a very good point, we start getting worked up. And if you start feeling that blood boil and all of a sudden those feelings of the fruit of the flesh, hatred, anger, that's where we got to watch it, right?
Yeah.
And that's where there's a limit to our apologetic arguments at
and
times.
That's so important to remember, too, is that we don't have to do the everything A to Z in one sitting at one time and have everyone buy into everything. Because mm-hmm. I feel like that's sometimes the attitude we bring about this is, okay, we're going to have this discussion, and by the end of this discussion, they're going to agree with me on every single point mm-hmm. and all of its mm-hmm. subpoints.
Yeah.
And recognizing, for one, that's not how humans work.
No, no.
That is grossly overestimating your own abilities. Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's one of those things that's like, that's not the point of this.
Yeah. And that's even church internal, right? I mean, and Paul's writing to the church, and like, you're starting to get all arrogant. Like, we think our theology's right. We think our theology's right. Look at us, right? We still do that. And we still get bickering about these things and these fine points of theology. And not saying there's no place for talking about it, how it impacts our lives, but we lose the plot sometimes. Yeah. You know, if we were just showing goodness to each other, for example, how much impact that would have in the community of faith.
And
I think there's always a place for it. But the best conversations I've had in more of that apologetic sense is when I've had a relationship and that person asks me a question. Mm-hmm. I didn't bring it up. They asked, you know, so talk with me, Dan, about this issue of abortion. Talk with me about, you know, this, you know, Jesus being fully God and fully man. Then they're ready to talk about it because mm-hmm. they've asked the question.
Well, and then there's so much psychology behind this. I could probably spend like 4 or 5 episodes just talking about the psychology behind this. But it really allows for, again, like, people are going to be receptive to that because you're not coming saying what you're doing is wrong. You're letting your life be the testimony. Mm-hmm. And when your life is the testimony, that opens people up. More than my words, because actions speak louder than words. It's a very simple statement.
Yeah. And yeah, if you've shown goodness, I mean, most people are going to respond. Not always. Some people still reject that, but most people are going to be positive response to that and, you know, be interested in other things you have to say then. Mm-hmm. Even Jesus in his ministry, you know, he heals some people and like, well, guess what? There's a good response to that and maybe a little more receptivity to his teaching. Not mm-hmm. always. But those go hand in hand. So, yeah, it's a good balance. And how do we work out those things in our lives?
Yeah. So one last question for you, and this one's not at all loaded or uncomfortable. and I want to preemptively, you know, frame this. I grew up as a missionary kid. I work at a church. You work at a church. Mm-hmm. We are in a church context.
Yep.
So this is obviously a really tricky discussion to have sometimes. But you talked a little bit about this on Sunday, about how some folks do have a calling to go out and make money to then give to the purposes of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely 100% a valid calling and gifting. I in no ways want to, mm-hmm. you know, discredit any of that, because that is very true. That being said, we are sinful humans. And sometimes that... We can kind of put our own desires and justify them using these faith terms. So I do know that there are some people who they'll say, yes, I am called to make money to give. Really, they're not called to make money. They're good at making money, and they don't want to spend their time investing in the community, or they don't want to give in a way that is. Money comes easy to them. Time does not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So just how do you parse out? Am I truly called to this, mm-hmm. or is this a convenient way for me to just kind of focus on what I want and feel good about signing that check?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and this could probably be applied to, I suppose, other areas, avenues of goodness too, or generosity. But this one's probably more prominent, and maybe for our area, you know, we're blessed in the United States, and I think a lot of us, even in our church community, with financial resources. And there is a time and place and a need for those kinds of gifts and generosity. I even think in Scripture, you know, Paul was taking collection for the church in Jerusalem and the Christians. And as he was working with some of the Gentile churches, they had more means. And he's encouraging them toward giving to that offering and doing that. You see that in some of the letters. And gives thanks when they do. And, of course, some supported him in his ministry and things like that. And like you said, our jobs are supported by the generosity of others.
I could not have
had
the upbringing I had without the generosity of mm-hmm. so many people.
Right. So, yeah, that's, you know, all said, I think that's fitting. And there's times and we need to be aware of that. And maybe that's the lead-in to say, are we listening for the leading of the Spirit as to what God is leading us towards? Sometimes it might be that, like, like Paul's saying, like, I know you Gentiles can't get over to Jerusalem. This is what you can do. Sometimes that's the case, right? We have lots of missions we support around the world. We can't all get over there, and we have some people that are older.
We all shouldn't be over there.
And they can't do it, but they can do this. They have resources they can give, and God very well might be saying, this is what you can do. Mm-hmm. But other times he might be saying, I know you can do that. However, this time you need to get involved in this way. You mm-hmm. need to give that time. You need to be on the ground physically helping with this person, right? Yes, you could write a check to help this family, but you need to do that. Or he might be saying, church, I know you can give to people in need, but I'm calling you to start a ministry where you're going to help people with mortgages. You're going to help people with doing these things. And it is kind of striking to see how often in urban areas where sometimes the churches have less financial resources, they have more of those ministries mm-hmm. versus those churches that have maybe more financial resources do not. Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets into some of this, like, oh, we don't want to get too uncomfortable. This is more comfortable for us just to say, I will give toward that. And again, nuanced here, because we want to say that's not like a bad thing.
No,
but
not
we
at
have
all.
To be willing to listen. And sometimes being, again, we've talked about goodness going kind of above and beyond. That means getting less comfortable mm-hmm. for us. Maybe getting involved in a relationship that's going to have some challenges. Person's going to be different, but that's what's needed here. And so making sure that we are being attentive to the Spirit. That's why I mentioned in the sermon I love, and there's people that are better examples of this than I. Who that's just how they're listening. And they're talking, you know, with Austin, and he's talking about what's going on in his life, and they're thinking, boy, God, what's going on? Why am I in this conversation? Are you asking? I have an extra room in my house. Am I supposed to be helping here to be generous? And I think to pay attention to what those things are, right? There's no mistakes that God's leading us to those conversations. And sometimes it might be, you know, hey, I can bless. We did the blessing offering last year at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Just envelopes. We didn't even know what's in there with cash. And just you come across somebody in need and say, hey, you know, we took these for a reason. I want to give this to you. And there's opportunities where people could use just a little financial pick-me-up, right? Mm-hmm. It can go a long, long way and really build life into them. But that's not always what's needed.
Yeah.
And sometimes, yeah, different ways. And I've heard that we had people talking about jobs, you know, sometimes just keeping somebody employed. Even though that could be difficult, it can go a long, long way.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about housing things, food things, all that, but there's resources. You talked about music. I talked about with words. Again, it's not always like, well, I got to have a lot of earthly resources. It could be, you look at the spiritual gift list, there's a lot of things people are good at, hospitality mm-hmm. that, you know, friendliness with people that really build people up.
And even one of my favorite examples is actually Job's friends before they start talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because before they start talking, Job's friends are doing exactly what they need to be, which is absolutely nothing, mm-hmm. just sitting in silence with someone.
Yeah, presence.
That presence. And that can even sometimes, you know, a check would be really nice. Sometimes they really need presence too.
Yeah, generosity through you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, and that's, I think, all of it's discerning what is God leading to, right? We got to pay attention to those nudgings from the Spirit, whether it's giving financially or giving our presence or giving our time or whatever, because these are things of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the evil one telling us to try to lift this person up. I mean, he's going to try to worm in and twist
right.
those things, but the initial prompting
is... And so being aware even of situations where you're almost looking for an excuse not to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
I know I do that. And I mean, the classic example is with folks who are, you know, begging on the side of the road. I find so many excuses not to even look at that person.
Sure.
Because I don't want, and you know, I mean, you can say what you want to say about, you know, when helping hurts and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm avoiding trying to help someone.
Right. I don't even want to know.
I don't even want to acknowledge that they're there because that puts me in a place of uncomfortability.
Mm-hmm.
And so being aware of, oh, am I looking for ways to get out of an uncomfortable situation? That might be something I need to keep
mm-hmm.
an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a natural, even kind of our body protect us against, like, oh, don't go in that. That's kind of uncomfortable, dangerous, right? And just natural body reaction, like our minds, too, will just push against that uncomfortable situation. And
mm-hmm.
So to let the Spirit lead us over those things and trusting his leading that he's going to provide then and it's going to be the right thing. And, yeah, sometimes I think you go by a situation and you don't have any prompting of, like, But other times, if we're honest, we know, why am I getting this feeling, this inkling, like, I got to talk to that person. I'm supposed to help here when we get that thing that comes up at church or whatever. So paying attention to that and praying about it. Be careful when we pray, but we should pray for those opportunities too, and then be ready to listen. So
absolutely. We are taking a break from this series this upcoming week. You said we've got a guest speaker coming in?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, former member of this church, Dan Wieringa, was here at the outset of Friendship and then was back here as a worker, kind of an administrator for a time. But he's a commissioned pastor in the CRC, does a lot of chaplaincy work. And so he kind of was looking for an opportunity to get back here to kind of pay it back to a congregation he's loved and been a part of. So, yes, he's going to be preaching on surrendering to God, which is fitting, I think, for
very fitting
the series we've been on this coming Sunday morning. But I'll be around as well, just not in the speaking role. So
you get to take a little bit of a breather.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Nice, so, yeah. And I'll be preaching Sunday night. So, you know,
there you go. Only a short one, then.
That's right. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time today and your energy. Thank you to all of you who have listened and walk with us as we learn. Look forward to meeting up again and learning more. Go in peace.